Hello, and welcome to Bird of the Week. It's a podcast about birds, released on a non-weekly basis. Episode 56, My Grandmother and the Budgerigar. Not going to lie, this will be a different episode. You see, for me, there has always been a link between my grandmother and budgerigars. Strange, I know, but she owned one, and some of my earliest memories are of her bird. So for this episode, well, it's gonna be part memoir, part eulogy, part budgie discussion. This won't be for everyone, so feel free to give it a skip. I won't be insulted, but for the rest of you, let's talk budgerigars.
Bird of the Week.
I guess before we begin, I should introduce my grandmother. Her name was Beryl. Such an old person name. Beryl is actually a kind of gemstone composed of beryllium, funnily enough. It can come in a variety of colours, from green and blue all the way through to pink and yellow. Blue beryl is called aquamarine, and green beryl, that's the famous one, green beryl is known as emerald. But that's by the by. My grandmother was born in 1927, but by the time I came on the scene, she and my grandfather had already lived a long, full life. In the late 1980s, they were living in Campbelltown, which back then felt positively rural, but today it's just another outer suburb of Sydney. My earliest memories are of their home, of my own life, where we lived, or what went on before my youngest brother was born. I remember almost nothing. But in those ghostly snatches of my most distant memories, my grandparents' house stands as the only building on a fog-shrouded street. To my four-year-old self, it seemed huge. I remember a massive staircase bending to an upper floor, and a lounge room on the top landing where a rotary phone stood. I remember running water through a soap holder in the bath and standing on my bed so I could look out the second-story window at the garden below. I'm sure, had I ever revisited it, I would have been startled by how small it actually was. Of course, I never will. The land was sold a long time ago, and the quiet bushland surrounds have been replaced with bustling suburban sprawl. But always, in that time, it was a place of games and wonder. In their garden, right down the back, my grandfather kept two cows named Millie and Molly. We would ride in a wheelbarrow to feed them in the early morning. He had always dreamed of owning a cattle farm, of all things, and I think they represented a quiet whisper of that ambition. In 1992, they sold the house and moved to a farm on the mid-north coast near the town of Taree. It was here that my pop would single-handedly raise and tend a herd of cattle until the age of 80. My grandfather was an impressive guy. But in that Campbelltown house, in a small white cage, my grandmother kept another pet beyond the two cows, and he was a small budgerigar named Bill. Which means it's time to meet today's bird, the budgerigar, or, as our American friends might know them better, the parakeet. These are a little pipsqueak of a parrot, native to the dry desert interior of Australia. They are one of the smallest species of parrot in the world. Fully grown, a budgie only gets to around 18 centimetres in length, and weighs 30 to 40 grams, that's 7 inches and 1 and a bit ounces. They're pretty unmistakable, they're a tiny, tiny parrot. But when it comes to plumage, the wild budgie is equally distinct. They have a bright yellow face, black scalloped banding runs down their head, neck, and over their wings, and then their breast contrasts with bright green. The budgie doesn't really have any close relatives. They are out there by themselves on the parrot family tree. They are distantly related to lorikeets, and I always remember whenever lorikeets visited our garden, the budgies would become quite excitable, calling out to them. Maybe they spoke the same language. Who can say? Budgies are what we call a nomadic bird, and this is different from migratory. Both migratory and nomadic birds move around, driven by weather conditions and food resources. But for migratory birds, their movements are predictable. They go from one place to another, and it is always from the same place at the same time. Nomadic birds are unpredictable. They roam around the land, alighting wherever the conditions suit them. For a desert-dwelling bird, this makes sense. The budgie comes and goes, driven to wherever water and food happen to be at any given time. Normally, budgies pal about in a family flock of up to 100 or so birds. But after the rains arrive, all bets are off. The flocks merge until they number several thousand birds, and when they take to the sky, they can swirl around in pulsing, almost organic patterns, like a school of fish suddenly airborne. This kind of flocking behaviour is most famously seen in starlings, and is called a murmuration. Murmuration. It's such a wonderfully resonant word. It seems to hint at a whisper of motion, but with a quiet secret hidden below the surface. The word is coined for the fluttering sound that the wings of a thousand birds in flight makes, rustling on the wind. But a murmuration is more than a flock. It is more than a sound. It is a visual marvel. It's a beautiful, aerial ballet where the birds twist and wheel, creating rolling and folding structures in the sky. As you might have guessed, based on their tendency to form large flocks, budgies are highly social birds. Multiple families live together in a community, a little bird finding safety in numbers. Hawks and falcons are only too happy to make a snack of these tiny prey. And so a dazzling flock provides much-needed protection. The best way I can describe a budgie with its buddies is as a chatty cathy. When they're together, they chitter and chatter away in a bubbling exuberance. Let's have a listen to some wild budgies now. People like budgies because they sound bright and cheerful. Others think it's more of a noisy racket, but I've always been a fan of their chitter-chatter. And I'm not alone, because worldwide, the budgie is the most popular pet. After dogs and cats, the third most popular pet, most popular bird. And so it must have been for my Nen. She was a funny person. Fiercely independent and stubborn, she liked to do things her way. Throughout his working life, my grandfather's work frequently took him away for long stretches of time. So Nen found ways to make do on her own, and for the most part, she was a person who always enjoyed her own company. Rarely alone in her solitude, happy in her own world. Maybe a little doddery? She had a habit of walking around the house, chatting to herself about whatever task still needed doing. Like all of us, she had her funny quirks. You couldn't call her after 4:30 in the afternoon because she would be watching The Bold and the Beautiful, and she would not answer that phone for anyone. She'd often talk to the TV as well, but you know what? I do that too. Sometimes. I'm pretty sure that's normal. Pretty sure. In a way, this chattery nature of hers always reminded me of a budgie, contentedly chirping away to itself. And of course, she always doted on us grandchildren, as all grandparents should. For me, she stands as the definition of what a grandmother is. Now, I suspect Nen bought Billy Boy sometime in the mid-1980s. This was long before we had any real understanding of bird welfare. I have no doubt Bill lived a sad, lonely life in that little cage. But ethical pet care is an episode for another time. The point is that for little Nate, this was my first interaction with a real, live bird. I was quite fascinated with the little fellow, so much so that on my 6th birthday, Nen gave me a budgie of my own. He was a blue, white, and grey bird. And, with all the imagination of a truly gifted child, I named him Bill the Second. It isn't even a good name for a bird. Now, Bill the Second was what they call a greywing budgie. While in the wild, all budgies are green and yellow with black scalloping on their wings. In captivity, fanciers have selectively bred a whole array of different colour morphs. There are something like 30 genetic mutations that can subtly or radically change a budgie's appearance. In the grey wing, all the colours are muted. Instead of black scalloping on the wings, it's grey. Yeah, hence the name. Other colours are also different. Instead of being yellow and green, Bill was blue and white. That this can happen goes to the physics and genetics of how feathers produce colour. So the two main colours for wild budgies are green and yellow. The yellow is a pigment. There is a molecule in their feathers that absorbs all the wavelengths of visible light, except yellow, which it reflects. And so we see a yellow feather. Now, green is a bit different. Turns out it's a real challenge for birds to come up with a green pigment, and only a small few have worked it out. For most green birds, budgies included, they use a two-step process. They begin with a yellow pigment, as just described, and then they use complex nanostructures within the feather to scatter blue light. It's a similar phenomenon to the process that makes the sky blue. So now we have two features independently making yellow and blue. And as you may remember from your primary school days, if you combine yellow and blue, you make green. And that is how the budgie creates its green and yellow feathers. But my budgie, Bill II, was blue and white. In his case, he had a genetic mutation that stopped him from producing yellow pigments. As a result, the feathers that would have normally been yellow had no pigment, and so they were white. And the feathers that would have been green, again, had no yellow pigment, leaving only the blue to shine through. Now, there are lots of mutations that can change how the budgie feathers look. For example, you can get the opposite effect, where the blue gets turned off and the bird will appear completely yellow. It's endlessly fascinating, but for my budgie Bill, he couldn't make yellow. Another curious fact about budgie feathers that we can't enjoy is that they glow in ultraviolet light. This appears to play a part in their courtship displays and is how they select their mates. As with other birds, budgies have extra cones in their eyes that allow them to see in this different part of the spectrum. It's strange to think that the world we see must look vividly different to a bird. But anyway, back to my nan. When I was about 5, my grandparents left Campbelltown for Taree to finally fulfill the dream of tending to a herd of cattle. Whenever I think of my childhood, their farm is the site of some of my fondest memories. 50 hectares of paddock and pasture, a herd of cows, and my grandfather shunting them from one field to another, riding his old red trundling tractor. When we got older, he taught us how to drive it. When we didn't ride, Nen would take us on walks up the paddock to see where the cows were. Usually this was done with a stick in hand so we could poke any cow pats we came across. My brothers and I became experts in identifying the age and consistency of bovine bowel movements. Yeah, must be a boy thing. We would play in the stockyard, running through the pens and cattle crush where the cows would be dehorned. We would roll under the barbed wire fences and walk up to the back paddock where there was a pond with reeds and weeds and a fallen tree to sit on and have morning tea. We'd cast buckets into the muddy water to pull up guppy fish, or gudgeons, as my nan used to call them. The neighbour's pet beagle, Bonnie, would always be around and seemed to spend more time with my grandparents than it did with its owners. It was an old, slow dog, but we used to take it for rides up the farm on the back of the tractor. Sometimes Bonnie would smell a kangaroo and get excited, bounding off barking into the bushes. But she was usually more interested in laying in the shade or eating a treat. When I close my eyes, my memories of that place still crowd in as vivid and fresh as if I had only just visited. I remember every inch of that wonderful place. From the rough brick house, the long trail up to the boundary fence, the ring-barked trees, the stony dams, the tractors parked in the shed near the beam where our parents would measure our heights. It's like I could walk those fields again and feel as though not a single day had passed. But that was all some time ago now. You may be wondering what happened to Nen's old bird Bill. He didn't live long after they moved, maybe a year or two, but over the years, I owned many budgies myself, apart from Bill. One day, a lost budgie flew into our yard and we saved it from a group of aggressive minor birds. We named it Henry. Henry was a girl, A few years later, when Henry died, we decided Bill needed a new friend, and that's how we ended up with Cindy, who was a cinnamon wing budgie. She had a different mutation that made her black banding brown. But by this stage, my own Bill II was getting old. Somehow, and we're not sure how it happened, Bill lost the ability to grip with his toes. We took him to a vet, but they never could really explain what the issue was, but there was nothing they could do for him. Even so, he lived for many years after this and became quite expert at balancing on his feet without gripping the perch. We put extra wide branches and a platform in there to make life a little easier for him, and he seemed to get along okay. My Bill ended up being a long-lived budgie. He got to about 13 years of age, which is getting up there for a little bird. In captivity, 15 is probably the upper limit a budgie can get to, though there are some rare cases of birds making it as old as 20. The last budgie I owned was another escapee we rescued from our garden. He was a blue and white bird that eventually ended up with the name Giorgio Armani. At the time, I lived in Sydney with a friend who also owned two budgies named Coco Chanel and Lord Lamington. Chanel and Giorgio did not get along. Maybe as rival fashion labels, we should have foreseen this. One of the things that always fascinated me was how different each of their personalities were. Chanel was always an angry bird. She didn't like other budgies getting in her space. Giorgio had a more subdued and quiet disposition. And Lord Lamington was the life of the party, always bouncing around the cage, chirping happily. But in time, each of these budgies fell off the perch. Lamington was the last to go in 2015. Unsurprisingly, the happiest bird lived the longest. But no matter our disposition, time will take its toll on all of us. One of the hardest things about growing up is watching our loved ones age. I think when we're children, everything seems eternal. Because in a way, when you're a child, everything always has been. For my 10-year-old self, my Nen had always been there. She seemed unchangeable, untouched by time. But of course, that wasn't true. Because for a 10-year-old, the hands of time have hardly ticked. But tick they do, in their own slow, indomitable way down the years. The acres of farm, the stockyard and shed, the large home and gardens my grandparents tended to for 15 years, gradually became too big a task. As time slipped by faster, they slowed down. Eventually, they had to sell. That enchanting place of my childhood, those endless back paddock walks, tractor rides, and fishing expeditions, one day it wasn't there anymore. And that's when you realize that what for me, as a child, had been the eternal, permanent state of things. For my grandparents, who were 80 by this stage, that magical place they'd made for their grandchildren had just been one phase of their life. A wonderful phase, but just a phase, which ends like any other. I didn't realize it at the time, but for me, my grandparents' departure from the farm would come to be one of the marks that signaled the end of my own childhood, the end of that first phase. For my grandparents, that move marked the beginning of their final phase. They were still active, they still lived independently, but after so long being unchanged and untouched, it seemed like time had finally found them. "Everything is difficult," Nan used to say. In her final years, she had what I would call a matter-of-fact morbid streak. "Everyone I know is dead. Nathan, when I die, don't be sad," Nan used to say. I was ready. Never with a tinge of sadness, never with regret or fear. She'd lived her life. She'd enjoyed it. But she was done. The family didn't always like her talking that way, but I think she had a healthy attitude towards life and death. It held no fear for her. It was not long after they moved from the farm that she started talking this way, but the old girl had a lot of life in her, even if she didn't always want it. Even after leaving the farm, she had another 14 years of relative good health. My pop was the first to go. He died quite suddenly in his sleep one day. He was 90, but no one expected it. In hindsight, I think that's the way we would all like to go. A blessing enjoyed only by a few. But it was not to be for my Nen. All the time, things are slipping out the back door. After a few more years, she had to move to assisted living, and then, finally, a nursing home. And she did not like that. It was hard to see her there, alone and frail. She missed Pop a lot, I know. Every day I wake up and I'm mad I'm still here. That was hard. She got her wish in the end, though. I know that isn't the happiest ending to the story, but when our stories are all inexorably leading to one place, I guess that's where they all end sooner or later. But to borrow a cliché, life is not about the destination, it's about the journey. So rather than leaving off on where things ended, let's take a moment to consider what was gained along the way. It is hard to pin down exactly where my love of birds sprung from. I mean, have you seen a bird? They're pretty excellent, need I say more. But I do believe my grandmother played an important role sparking that love. Yes, there were the budgies, Bill and Bill the Second, but there was more. One of my earliest childhood fascinations was with a collection of bird cards that came free in packets of King Kara tea. It was a set of 480 cards featuring the birds of Australia. I can't remember a time in my life before I had those cards, and it was Nen who gave me the first ones. I loved shuffling through them, gluing them into an album, and waiting in excited anticipation whenever a new pack of tea was opened to see what new bird I might find. It would take me the best part of 30 years to collect them all. But I did, and they remain one of my most cherished possessions. But when it came to Nen, the birds really were ever-present. When we used to visit her on the farm, she always fed the king parrots and redrumps that visited the veranda. These are beautiful, large parrots, and the males had brilliant red heads and chests. There was a pair of them, and the male, who she called Daddy-O, was quite tame with her. He would fly into the veranda and call out to be fed. I used to love watching the morning feeding. That strange interaction with something beautiful and wild when you gain its trust just for a moment. There is something special when you connect to the natural world. In so many ways, my Nen gave me the birds, and they have never left. With each year, the distant shores of that past recede ever further away as we are borne along on the tide of time. Those cherished days when there was always another visit to make, another time to cast buckets in the pond or feed the birds on the lawn, are long since past. But it is still a place I go back to often, a rose-tinted shade of it anyway. I still hear Nen fussing in the kitchen or see Pop sitting on the living room floor, conducting his nightly ritual of bandaging up his various bumps and scratches that he always seemed to have. They gave us such a gift. Nen and Pop left behind a large, loving family, a lot of happy memories, and for me, the birds. So thank you, Nen. Thank you for the budgie. Thank you for the birds. And thank you most of all for the love. And thank you all for indulging me in this rather different episode. It's funny how the life of our loved ones can become entwined in other objects. Maybe for you there is a similar person, or a similar story, a touchstone that you return to, of good times, and close friends and family, now long gone, but always with you. Maybe this story resonated. Maybe it didn't. At any rate, we will return to our normal format next time. I hope you will tune in again. And until then, this has been Bird of the Week.